Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU invites local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. On today's program, Wes Allison, CEO of the ExtraCo Event Center. Hosting the conversation is Nan Holmes. This conversation was recorded July 10th, 2017 in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Nan Holmes, talking today with Wes Allison, the CEO of ExtraCo Event Center. And Wes, we're just welcoming you here to KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. And as CEO, your job territory is very extensive. And while many people just might first of all think Heart of Texas, Fair and Rodeo, your organization is so much more than that.
Well, it is, Nan, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here with KWBU today and you and just visit a little bit about leadership, because it is a very important thing in what we do out there. And we do, 200-plus events a year at that facility. It's not all just the Fair and Rodeo, which comes in October. And we have over 500 volunteers that help us make all those, a lot of those activities go on. And so it is very wide-ranging in what we do, and we can do anything from a horse show to WWE wrestling to Disney on Ice to a gun show. Like, you know, there's so many different things that happen at the facility, and it's such a great asset. It's a fun place to work and really have an impact on Waco.
Oh, I agree 100%. Even have a library sale.
Yes.
But I always want to know more about people's early days, about the people who shaped you when it comes to leadership. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in the panhandle of Texas in Stratford. It's a little town about 80 miles north of Amarillo. It is still in Texas, about 13 miles from the Oklahoma line. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up with my dad was a county extension agent, and my mom was a school teacher. And I really think that the most significant shaping in my life as far as leadership came through my 4-H experiences and through Texas 4-H and having the opportunity to be involved in that great youth development organization as a young person, and ultimately had the privilege and opportunity and honor to serve as the state 4-H president for Texas. And so got to really do some really neat, fun things. And so that really was probably most significant in developing my leadership, and that's all through my parents and the adult leaders that led that program.
Can you think of anyone in particular? Now, of course, your parents. But
sure.
Does somebody come to mind who really, when you have to draw on your leadership skills, they come to mind?
Well, I ultimately think that significant person in my life would have been one of my professors at Texas A&M University, and his name was Dr. Gary Potter. He was our horse judging team coach, and so I got the opportunity to participate in the horse judging program at A&M, and he really was the one that gave me the skills, I would say, to talk in front of people and really get out there and make sure that I communicated well, and I think that's so important in what we do. So Dr. Potter was a big influence on me during my years at Texas A&M that ultimately developed me into who I am today.
Were you thinking then that, oh, maybe I'd like to be in some position of leadership when you started out with Dr. Potter? Did that plant that seed, or did it come just gradually?
Well, I think it's always been part of my life. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, the other person that's been extremely influential in my leadership development is my wife. And we met when I was a sophomore at A&M, and she was an incoming freshman. And so it's been a great journey for us. We've been married since 1993, and so we've got two wonderful kids. But she drove me. I spent a little time managing a ranch in Coleman, Texas, about 10,000 acres with 600 mama cows, and they never argued with me, not one time. And so, but she said, Wes, I think you went to and got that degree from Texas A&M, and you have those skills, and you would be better off putting them to use somewhere else. And so I think that ultimately really drove me into how I got to where I am today, is that, you know, Dr. Potter planted a lot of those seeds about taking on leadership, and he gave me some opportunities to lead within some organizations there at Texas A&M. And so that's what gave me the opportunity. And then I would say Jennifer, my wife, was really the pusher that got me to where I am today.
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget that marriage might be teamwork, the ultimate teamwork. If you're working as a team, You may not even know what the goal is, but you know that the two of you are thinking of each other's best interest all the time. And a lot of times we forget that it's really our spouse who has helped us along the way.
Definitely. I believe a lot in servant leadership. And that is definitely what we have in our family, and that we serve each other. And ultimately, I think that as I look at I grew up really in a volunteer world. As I look at what I was a county extension agent for a while, and so I worked with a lot of volunteers. I work with a lot of volunteers here in my role now, mm-hmm. but even more significant in volunteer numbers was when I was at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo before I came here as the livestock show manager. And so you learn to serve people. And I think that's ultimately what makes a difference in a leader. It's not about just giving direction. It's about rolling up your sleeves and working together. And that's really truly how we do in our marriage and how I do in my work and working with my staff as well as all the volunteers.
Well, on any given day at the Extraco Event Center, just as you said, that is what the name implies, events, events, events.
Yes, ma'am.
And what is your secret weapon, or what do you do? How do you manage so many events? And when you try to balance them, you may have, as you've just said, one event here that is completely opposite from the other event. You've got to pull it off all during a relatively short period of time. Right. What is your secret weapon?
A great team. We have a wonderful team at the Extraco Event Center. I've got a great staff. You know, and we as staff spend most of our time working on the year-round events. The volunteers typically spend time on the Margarita Salsa Festival, the South 40 Expo, the Heart of Texas Fair and Rodeo, all of those events. So we as staff members spend our time working on all the other events that go on there. And ultimately, I tell a lot of folks all the time, we are there to clean up one group's mess so somebody else can come make another mess. And that's literally what
like
we
the
do.
The movie theater.
That's right, exactly. And so it is a great teamwork. And so we just divide and conquer. I'll be honest with you. I have staff members that, their job may be to scoop out a stall one day and go set up chairs the next or help get ice moved in for Disney on Ice or whatever it may be. And so we do a lot of different things. That is the really neat job, part of our job, is it's no 2 days are the same. And so there's a lot of balance, a lot of time management. But, in the book, Good to Great, which is one of my favorite books mm-hmm. in the whole world.
My brother's too.
Yes. Is we get the right people on the right seat on the bus. And that is a big deal to me, is making sure that we have the right folks on the bus and they're in the right seats and that their talents can show through. Because that's, again, it's about being a team when we're working late, late hours.
Well, let's move from the event center to the really big news. Most people around here know now that there was a bond issue, it passed, and there's going to be a big expansion in your facility. And describe that for if someone has not had time to look at the paper, understand. Maybe they weren't in, I think everyone in McLennan County voted, but it was a little light votership.
Sure,
so
sure.
Some people may not know 100% about the expansion.
Politics is an interesting beast, definitely, and I think we learned a lot in doing this and working through what we had to do to get the venue tax passed. So let's start by explaining what it is. Ultimately, Proposition 1 was to enact a venue tax. A venue tax is a vehicle that the legislature put in the 90s, and it helps to build facilities that create entertainment as well as you see professional sporting facilities built and these using these venue taxes. It's a hotel motel tax and a rent car tax. So it doesn't, again, we as citizens don't see our ad valorem or property taxes go up with this. So it's not a bond election like we would see at a school or like a city or a county where those tax rates would go up. It is specifically a revenue tax that's on the items that we talked about, hotel motel, rental cars. And so when we look at those things and we talk about, okay, who's using those? Well, for the most part, it's folks coming to our facility. It's folks coming in for Baylor football games. It's folks coming in for all the different activities at the convention center and all those kind of things. And so it's a great way to generate some dollars to upgrade facilities without it costing you and me any money. And so when we look at what ultimately it will totally change, it is a game changer for this facility. You know, we've been there since 1953. We've traditionally been a coliseum for rodeo entertainment mm-hmm. and different things like Disney on Ice and a huge horse show facility. We have one of the greatest horse show facilities in the whole country right here in Waco, Texas. So we felt like we need to look at an opportunity to expand that, expand our equine opportunities, as well as expanding into the youth sporting events. And so we don't have a significantly large venue here in Waco that can handle youth volleyball, as an example, or youth basketball, mm-hmm. as an example. And so the new expo building will give us that opportunity. It's got 35-foot ceilings in it. It literally can hold 6 full-size basketball courts and 12 volleyball courts. And so it is a big building, 80,000 square feet of rentable space that we'll use to generate youth sports activities. And we knew that that's a significant growing piece of the economy. And being on 35, as much as sometimes we don't like 35, is a great asset to our community. And so that's really what it's going to do. So it'll build new sports facility. It'll build new livestock facilities. It will replace the old GE and Creative Arts buildings in order to host the library book sale in a big, new, nice facility. And then it will also allow us to work with the city and Parks and Rec to do some recreational events and those kind of things in there. Mm-hmm. We're going to see some significant increase in changes to the park feel that you will have out there, some walking trails, those kind of things ultimately. It's about a 3 to 5 year process of getting this all done. So it's going to take a little while. It's not going to – I get the question every day. Okay, it passed. When are you going to start? And I'm like, well, it still has to – all that money has to go through the county. And so that is a county-owned facility, so it's owned by you and me, the citizens of McLennan County. But the commissioner's court has to set those time deadlines and those kind of things to get all that done. So we're working with Judge Felton, the commissioners, to get all that in place and move forward the way we need to move it forward and get started in the most efficient way, because we still have to operate the facility. We still have to have the 200-plus mm-hmm. events out there. We can't just stop working so that they could stop building. That's not how that works, because we are a nonprofit. The Heart of Texas Fair is a nonprofit, and so we lease that facility from the county. And most folks may or may not know that, but that's what we do. So we operate it with no public funds. From an operational standpoint.
Well, that's so interesting. And for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Nan Holmes, talking today with Wes Allison, CEO of Extraco Event Center. Well, that is really helpful to understand. So the domed facility will be — you won't tear it down, you'll remodel it?
Well, actually, the Coliseum itself —
yeah,
will
I couldn't
not,
think of the word
yes,
Coliseum.
Yes, the Coliseum, we won't do any work to it. So it is, when it was updated in the mm-hmm. late 90s, early 2000s, it's a great facility. What we're going to do, a best way to say this, is supplement it. Actually, the new expo center that we're going to, or expo building that we'll use, the 80,000 square foot multi-purpose building, it will actually attach to the Coliseum through a climate-controlled walkway. And so, in essence, that gives us opportunities maybe to host larger conventions that the convention center can hold or that need an arena-type setting and still have that breakout space that they need in those examples. And so, but really, the most important part is that we will connect it in order to do the youth sports activities. And so we can put about 6 volleyball courts in the Coliseum or 2 basketball courts. And, of course, if you grew up here, you know that Baylor used to play basketball in that facility. And so we'll get to see some of that, not Baylor, obviously, but some basketball mm-hmm. and indoor sports in there. And then we'll connect it back to the expo building in order to be able to go back and forth to serve that clientele. One of the, unique opportunities that we also have is to add horse stalls and ultimately add another arena and connect all of it through connected walkways as well. And so if you look at the whole facility, once it's completed, then all of our buildings, all of our horse stalls, everything will be under one roof. Now, that's not one continuous roof, mm-hmm. obviously, but basically if you're walking from your horse stall in the far back part of that facility all the way to the new expo building, you never have to go outside. And that's a big deal, because if you look at big facilities like Fort Worth and Oklahoma City that we compete with for events, or Abilene or Tulsa or wherever it may be, then we want to be unique and we want to be special and we want to put our best foot out there. And so that's what we felt like as we worked with a group called of architects from Populous to do that.
And so the fair is your biggest event.
Yes.
Is it 2 weeks?
It's 10 days. Two weekends, 10 days. And so we start on a Thursday and go through us the next Saturday. And so it is 10 days. It's the largest event in Central Texas. About 225,000 people a year attend that event. The fair serves as our largest fundraiser for scholarship giving. We will give about $250,000 away annually in scholarship funds, and that number continues to grow. We have surpassed the $3 million mark in giving. All of that money stays here in Central Texas, goes to youth here in Central Texas. And so we're very proud of the fact that as a nonprofit, we can help young people further their education, whether it be at TSTC or MCC or Baylor University or Texas A&M or Harvard for that matter, or wherever it may be. We want them to go out there and know that because they had strong volunteer and strong citizenship and strong grades and had a financial need, that they have an opportunity to go to school and the fair will help them.
When I think about the fair here, it has an amazing connection with generations. It's been something that families have done forever, and they continue to do it on a family basis. Everyone scrapes together enough money to go to the fair, and it's a big deal.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's 65 years. I've been here since 1953 was our first fair, and it is a wonderful opportunity. I had the privilege when I came in 2002 to be here for the 50th anniversary. And so now 15 years later, we're celebrating our 65th anniversary. And we truly believe that our theme is the year of the goat. Now, goat meaning greatest of all time, because we think it is the greatest one of all time. And we try to make it better and more significant each year. We know that it's the most economical entertainment. Where else can you go and spend $10 as an adult and get a lot of free entertainment, see the rodeo for free, see a concert for free, enjoy all the neat, fun things that we have in attractions, and whether it be pig races or the Mutton Bustin' Arena or whatever it may be, that we have opportunities for you to be a part of the fair. And it truly is generational. And we see families come back year after year.
Yes.
And mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and young people. And it is a great tradition in our country. Fairs started back in the 1700s, late 1700s is the first fair in the United States. And so we carry that tradition on of, you know, basically as an agriculture fair, we're there to promote ag. And although we're a rural community, really, in a lot of senses, we are much more every day an urban community. And so when we can educate young people about where their milk comes from, and it's not HEB, it's you know, that cow, or where that egg came from, then that's truly what our mission in life is as a fair, is to give you ag education. And we really term it more edutainment, because we try to entertain you while you're doing that. And so that's really what we do with the fair. So it's a lot of fun. Where else can you go see baby sheep be born? Where else can you see baby pigs? And all those neat things that we do in our H.E. Buddy barnyard. And so there's a lot of neat things to see. Now, you have to come to the fair and eat something on a stick, right? That's tradition.
Fried
as well.
Twinkies.
something on a stick. And so anyway, that it is a family tradition, no doubt.
Well, when you start to tackle a large venue, really personally, what is the first thing you do?
Well, I will tell you from a standpoint of we start on the fair probably 18 months before it actually happens. And so we've been planning the 2018 fair already. And we work that long. It takes that much effort to get everything organized. We've got a great group of volunteers that help us raise money for that event. And I think you start with small stuff, and you start with a schedule, and you start saying, okay, do we want to change things in the schedule? What significant issues do we really have last year that we need to reevaluate? And so we kind of go through that same model of that you see out there of, okay, what's the event, and you know, what do we need to tackle first? And then once we've done that, if we look at 2016, then what do we need to do different? And how do we reevaluate where we were? And then what are those opportunities to add to, take away? You know, it's a different world when we start talking about a fair, where used to we all came together and to see the tractors and the things like that. When kids can see everything they want to see on their iPhone, then it's a little different in what we do. It totally changes the way. And I've been in the business almost 20 years. We totally look at it different than we used to. And about, you know, the the iPhone turned 10 week before last, you know, 10 years old for an iPhone was the, you know, first time we had that. I also heard statistics about the millennials will actually be the largest population in 2018. They will outpace the baby boomers in population, which is amazing to me. And then you also have the fact that they have, I think the number was 3 billion with a B. They have $3 billion more dollars in buying power than the baby boomers. And the baby boomers are the, you know, those that are, that have the, have the best retirement and have all those great things that, that, so it's totally changed what we do. And so we look at things differently now. We look at technology and we look at ways to bring those things to you, because people don't want to wait in line to get something. They want it now. And so we look a lot at generational, because I tell everybody we have to be the fair whether you're 8 or 80. And so we have a wide generation, a lot of generational gaps that we have to cover. Mm-hmm. And so we really look at it that way and try to say, okay, what can we be to everybody? And that's a big question.
Well, it's almost like the great Gretzky, who said you have to know where the hockey puck is going to be, because if you're starting 18 months out, you've really got to have a few forecasters who will tell you what are the trends, what might be something to do. And certainly social media has changed everything for anyone who's having any kind of event and they want people to come and participate. But I still think that the family, especially low-income, middle-class families, are looking for something that's affordable, that the whole family can do. That is something so special. And I think the fair does fill that need for so many people.
I do, too. I think it's one of those deals where, again, if you're a middle-income family that you want to come spend a day together, you can really enjoy an opportunity where you don't have to spend a lot of money to do it, you know, and from an admission standpoint, and you get a lot of entertainment. And so there's a lot of free attractions that we put on the fairgrounds just for that reason, is because we want to give that value to the gate admission. And so a lot of times we start our conversations with, is this value to our consumer? Mm-hmm. Are they really getting something out of this?
Well, you've been a member of this community since 2002. You know some of the challenges, some of the successes, and you've just witnessed a big success. But is there anything you're just determined that you're going to accomplish for your own sense of leadership and as a member of this community?
Well, I think ultimately you talk about that big, significant success that we just had. And to be able to do that and see the change in the leadership of our community, from the county to the city to the school systems, and how much more progressive we become ultimately about being a community that embraces growth and being a community that is going to work together. It was a wonderful experience to really bring together the city, the county, and the school and make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I think that ultimately for me, I think when we not that I ever stop, I don't know that we check off the list to add something else to it. And so my to-do list never stops. And so I would say that if I can continue to grow the facility, but ultimately to me, more importantly, is to grow the people and to make our circle of friends as big as we can make it. And really, I talk about our family, our fair family. That to me is the most significant change we can have in growing those generations of consumers. And so as we look at the young people and the millennials as they get out of college and they go get join the workforce, what do they need? What do they want to be? And how do they volunteer? We learned very quickly as we started recruiting south of 40 volunteers that they don't volunteer maybe like you and I do, and they don't volunteer because they want to give back. They do it for social reasons. Now, ultimately, they want to give back, but they're not folks that are going to go stand in the parking lot and park cars. They want to be the folks that are presenting the big check, or you know, to the nonprofit or whatever it is. And so, growing people and growing our circle of family is really, really important to me, and that ultimately is what I wake up every day excited to go do.
Well, I know that one thing you must be able to lead in is good customer service, because there's not a thing that you try to do at the, you know, complex that doesn't require a lot of good customer service. And there are times when some of us think, or me, that that's going the way of the dodo bird, because it's something that's intangible, but it's very important, especially to older people who customer service is can woo someone into doing things they didn't dream they wanted to do.
Sure.
So how do you address that?
Well, we are all about people. As I mean, not only, we have internal customers and our volunteers and our board of directors and folks like that, but our external customer who keep us keep the doors open out there, and so they're extremely important to us. And being able to have customer service, whether it be the older generation that wants you to take time to visit with them and listen and those kind of things, or it be the younger generation that just says, hey, can you put it out there on social media so I can get it on my own? And so I think customer service is a lot different for different generations. And so we, too, have to kind of modify what we're doing and how we manage folks. I will tell you that we believe as a organization that we have to go above and beyond to create a great customer atmosphere. And we do that. I'll tell you one of the things that people don't believe is a big deal, but at night. So we have a crew that works at night when we have a horse show going on. And they come in and we have a tenant sweeper that's a big industrial sweeper that will sweep the aisles. We sweep the aisles. We dump the trash. We clean the facility at night so that when you come the next day to show your horse, it's in a clean facility. So many facilities out there that we compete with don't do that. We get a lot of praise for the fact that we keep a clean facility and we keep it looking nice. And so I think that's part of customer service too, is just how you respect and believe in yourself. And so we do a lot of that and trying to keep the facility nice. I think, on the other hand, we also are the folks that a lot of times – if something's going to mess up, my tickets got wrong, or I didn't get the right seat, or I can't see, or whatever it may be, then we have to deal with that too. And so we do a lot of education in our office about how to treat customers and how we manage customers and how we need to understand that in the volunteer world especially, as a staff member, the praise goes to the volunteer. So that internal customer, we want them to feel good about what they're doing. That external customer, it's a lot of times, and I tell my staff this a lot, listen, just be quiet and listen. Listen to their problem. Doesn't necessarily mean that we can give them the solution they're looking for, but ultimately we can come up with a solution. But you have to close your mouth and open your ears in order to create great customer service. And so we do that a lot, and we believe in that a lot. And so even in the heat of battle, we have to do that. And so sometimes it's been a learning curve for a lot of my staff members to be able to do that.
And I think it's very important because you never know when someone is just in need of being letting someone express, you know, able to express themselves to someone. They don't expect you to move heaven and earth. They just want to hear from you. And that alone is very important. And it may just be the only time that day someone has listened to someone. You just never know when you're going to really make a big difference. And also to set an example for young people is in this hustle-bustle day, or you're having big events and everybody's under extreme pressure. But if you can take that moment to just take time for people, it will pay back.
Oh, it does. I totally agree with that. We've been through some situations where we because of our customer service and because we would listen to you and because we wouldn't just go no and we wouldn't just cut you off. We use the 2-second rule a lot. So I want you to finish stopping, then I'm going to count to two and then I'll talk. Because so much now, especially my kids as well, is they want to go, but I'm like, no, just sit there and listen to me and then we'll, you know. And so we do that as staff members, is that we have to listen to that customer and to really figure it out. Because I think you're right, Nan. If you won't listen, then how do you know what the problem really is? And ultimately, that just may be, hey, I wanted you to listen to me. And so we talk a lot, and we talked earlier when I came in about Disney and about the Disney experience. And although we're a long ways from Disney, we want to create that Disney atmosphere. We want you to come to the fair or come to an event out there and go, wow, that was the best experience I've had. I don't really know why. But ultimately, the customer service and the experience that I had with a concert or whatever it may be, that it makes me want to come back and do more.
Oh, Wes Allen, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Sure.
I feel uplifted, and I know that you're on the right track, and best of luck with all you do this year.
Thanks for the opportunity, Nan.
This conversation was recorded July 10th, 2017 in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes can be found on our website at kwbu.org under the Programs tab, Central Texas Leadership Series.